use the app on your phone?
I did. Hey, it's amazing what your phones can do. All the stuff it can do that you don't even know about.
What was the verdict?
My foot is 12 inches long.
I just saw you looking over at your crotch. I wasn't sure what you were doing.
What?
Over there.
No, come on. I was. See, you all. It's the updates that get me in trouble. And it's not even my fault.
That's not your fault, but it's funny. It is funny anyway.
Yes.
We've been talking a lot of Tigers today. The Lions, of course, it's football season. 2-1 to start the season, John. They're coming off the win against the Arizona Cardinals. And we're generally feeling good about this team. I think some Lions fans are looking at this injury list piling up, and they're starting to get a little concerned. Frank Ragnow, week to week with a torn pec, was the report late last night. We know he's tough.
Yes, he is.
And we don't know how this is going to be handled, though.
No, we don't. And we don't know the severity of it. And I don't know how much Dan will be able to tell. I don't know how much Dan really knows in regards to the doctor saying, oh, it's not that bad, or it's bad. Like, I mean, that's
right.
Okay. Is it completely torn? Is it, you know, how much of it is torn? Like, that's why they always have the grades. Like, it's a, you know, grade one ankle sprain, grade two, grade three. Or it's, you know, we talk about the ACL, MCL, all those different, you know, PCL. Like, what grade are, we don't know the grade of the tear. So it's hard for us to, should we know.
Right. Again, we'll get the info that we get and pass it along. I know Derek Barnes, a longer timeline as well. Davenport. Belief is he's done for the season. Let's get some answers. Let's talk to the Lions head coach, Dan Campbell. Dan, we appreciate you making some time for us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start with the game from Sunday. How are you feeling after the second win of the year?
Look, I always feel good after a win. They're hard to come by in this league. And, you know, I tell you what makes you feel good is to know the type of game we were going to need to play to beat that opponent. You know, it was going to be a little bit of a lunch pail, hard hat type game, man. Dirty work in the trenches, and it was going to require everybody, receivers, DBs, the whole deal. And I tell you what, they responded in a huge way. You know, I thought our big set the tone and We played a rugged physical game, man, for that win. Proud of them.
And I mean, nobody's going to complain about a win. We always have some questions. What was the difference in the second half, specifically the third quarter, versus the first where you scored on the first two possessions? It seemed like you were able to move the ball consistently, and then the second half and the third quarter, it wasn't as consistent.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, you can go through the drives. It was, you know, it was one thing here, one thing there. I mean, we, you know, you come out and, man, we're in a third and one, and then we have a false start, you know, backs us up. And so I would have felt pretty confident about getting that first down. Then you get in a third and six, we end up, you know, we don't convert on it. You know, you come back on the next possession and you know, we throw an interception. We just, you know, they ran a kind of a change pressure. So, you know, a couple errors there, a couple different guys. You know, we come back out. Defense gets a huge stop. You know, Carlton makes that huge play on fourth and one. I felt like that was a critical play in the game. And I also felt like that was the time when we needed to finish this game. You know, it was where you felt like we got to try to put them away there. And, man, we get in a fourth and one, and it's really the one play the whole game where we get knocked back, you know, up front, and so we get, you know, we don't convert there, and so it was just kind of one thing after another. But you know, I thought we started outstanding. I thought the offense set the tone, that O line did, and then I thought defense, man, finished it, and special teams in the second half. So it was a total team effort. I was proud of those guys.
You've been a team that's won a lot with offense. Are you starting to be the type of team that can also win with defense now?
Absolutely. We can win any way we need to win, and that's what you love, man. When you have three units that are playing in sync and you have the ability to play any type of game you need to, depending on what's going on, or if one unit needs a little bit of pick-me-up at different times, that's a good feeling. And I feel like that's what we got. Our defense is playing at a very high level. They have for 3 weeks going now. AG's doing an outstanding job. And those guys understand the plan. what's going to take to defend the opponent. And we're playing physical, violent, smart, disciplined football right now. And they're a difference maker, man. They are. And offensively, you know, there's always things that we're going to want to clean up, but the objective is to score more than the opponent. Our defense can't allow them to score more than our offense, and that's what's going on right now.
I know when you're playing, when I was playing, there's always things that happen on the field that you got to laugh at in the moment. And I don't know if you saw it or even understood it at the time, but David Montgomery picking up 6 yards with his feet not even touching the ground. What was your reaction, and what was David's reaction when he came to the sideline?
Well, really that whole game, just the nature of that, but even that play is like mother's milk when you're a baby. You want to know the truth. It was just, I mean, it's food for the soul. It was outstanding. That guy fought for every blade of grass, and then your old line is just surging. I mean, and they finished, and really the whole game was that way. I mean, our backs were driving for every yard, and then you see here comes the O-line, here comes St. Brown, our tight ends, everybody is just pushing the pile. And that one, hell, we got 16 yards on that. I mean, that's nothing but willpower and effort, you know, and it was awesome.
We're talking to Lions head coach Dan Campbell. What are you still chuckling over the...
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Dan, we want to get some updates on some injuries. I know you spoke yesterday with the media on most of these guys, but Frank Ragnow, we saw the report, torn pec week to week. We know he's tough. Is the thought maybe rest him with the bye week looming, or do you think the plan is to play him for the upcoming game?
Yeah, I mean, look, first of all, Frank is stubborn, all right? And he's hard-headed Frank, and he's tough, he's stubborn, and... So, you know, he wants to go, and he always wants to go. But, this is something we're still talking about right now. I'm not entirely sure what we're going to do with him. A lot of it is where is he going to feel by, you know, middle or end of the week. But he does have something in there, you know, and he did play through some of this last week, you know. And so we'll do what's best for him and what's best for us in the moment, ultimately. But you know how I feel about Frank. We all do. Appreciate the heck out of him. He's tough, man.
Marcus Davenport, it sounds like you mentioned that he's going to be out for the rest of the year. Who, other than Josh Pascal, who helps fill that void? And is there any chance we see a little bit more James Houston?
Well, I don't know that yet. Like, I would tell you this, Pascal's going to take on a much bigger load. Mm-hmm. You know, Pascal's going to be, obviously, he and Hutch are your ends. Levi's going to need to do some of that, which he did in training camp. There's a good chance, you know, we could bring somebody up off the vet squad or the practice squad. You know, Houston could be a candidate. So we know we're going to need to bring in some reinforcements for sure, just losing that body. You know, and Davenport was playing at a high level. It hurts. It does. It hurts losing him. He's been a force in there. But we also, it's why you have the depth that we have and the players that we've acquired. Brad's done a hell of a job, and we've always identified that depth is important, man, and you got to have it. So we have guys that we know are going to step up and do a hell of a job for us. They're ready for it, and everybody in this building knows. Like, you are one play away, and it's your chance. It's your opportunity to help your team and showcase what you got.
James Houston, healthy scratch for the 2 of the 3 games this season. There's maybe a disconnect from fans to the way that you guys have deployed him this season. I don't know that I consider him in the doghouse, but you don't seem like he's maybe the next guy up. Where does he need to get to maybe be the pass rusher he was at the end of 22?
No, I think he just keeps working, you know. And there again, it's so much of it is who do you sit if he comes, you know? Everybody that we have up right now is playing at a pretty high level on defense, and they all have a role, you know, between defense and special teams. So that's kind of where it's been. As long as he just keeps working, and you know, and when he gets his opportunity, make the most of him, you know, as with any player here.
Monday night, there's plenty of juice there. The black uniforms, which I know that you were a big proponent of, that they were, we were told yesterday, there's plenty of juice there. Seattle, outside the division, they're a team that has kind of been the nemesis. Is there a little extra juice knowing that it's Seattle coming to town?
Well, Yeah, it'd be nice to beat these guys since we haven't done it. I mean, you know, they've been one of those teams that's kind of had our number, but you know, I think more importantly, it's for the win itself. You know, Coach Carroll's gone, and it's a whole new, it's a brand new regime over there. There's a lot of new players. There are some holdovers, but I do kind of feel like, man, this really is a different team, new team that we're getting ready to face. They're playing good football. You know, as you said, they're undefeated here. And so this is a good opponent coming in here, man. They play outstanding defense. They're going to grind it out on the ground. You know, Walker's a hell of a back. And then Geno's, you know, he's playing well. They got the receivers. So, you know, this is going to be a pretty big test for us.
Obviously, there's been improvement in the secondary from last year to this year, and you just mentioned it. How big of a test will this be with Metcalf in Jigba, all of the receivers that they have for Terrion Arnold and the cast of characters that you guys have in the secondary?
Yeah, it'll be big. I mean, it's, you know, it's another group of good receivers that you know, that it's time to face. And, you know, they get good players. They got a mixture of different types of players, like you said, between Metcalf and Jigba and those guys. I mean, they all kind of do different things, and they're playing pretty well. But, man, I love where we're at, man. I love our secondary. I think CD is playing at a high level. I thought he had an outstanding game yesterday or 2 days ago. You know, I think Terrion Arnold gets better every week. I think Amik is getting better, man. He's playing in the slot. I think he's competitive, outstanding cover man. And then our safeties are playing at a high level. And I think collectively, the more they play together, the better that unit is gonna be on the back end. So we continue to grow. They continue to get better. And then collectively, it's only gonna get better time on task, and those guys communicate and playing with each other.
It's Lions head coach Dan Campbell. We're all excited for Monday night. Appreciate some of your time.
Absolutely. You guys take care.
Thanks. It's 97.1.
Hey, looking for ways to level up your fitness? Well, you can join the YMCA with no contract and no joiner fees and for just $3 a day. I'm loving all the YMCA has to offer, including access to indoor pools, Les Mills group fitness, hundreds of machines, discounts on personal training, which I'm taking full advantage of right now, all with free child watch while you work out. And now you can try the Y for free. Visit any of the 7 Metro Detroit locations and get a free guest pass. Learn more at ymcadetroit.org and find your Y today.
I have to commend John Jansen. I thought you were going to lose your professionalism at
Mother's Milk.
Mother's Milk.
I love how Dan is very open with us. He's very comfortable with us, and how he will, you know, he told people at one point to wear diapers, and now he breaks out the Mother's Milk. All sayings that we have heard throughout the course of our life, now put in football parlance, is tremendous.
As only he can.
Yes.
As only Dan Campbell can. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in terms of what we take out of that, Frank Ragnow, I think it was as honest an answer as he can give, which is that Frank's stubborn, wants to go. They don't know at this point. And John, I don't know what the right answer is, because we don't know the severity of the torn pec. We know he's played through some pretty gruesome stuff before.
Sure.
I don't know how much rest helps either. Right? Like, they could say, hey, the season is much more important than the one game coming up on Monday night.
Yeah.
There may be an argument to sit him Monday, the bye week, rest him even going into that next game and almost give him 3 weeks off. Does that heal the pectoral muscle enough to where it's not an issue? Probably not. So then they're in this gray area.
Well, and it's what do they do to make sure that it doesn't get torn all the way?
Right.
And I mean, I know there's, when you have a shoulder injury, like there's shoulder braces that you can wear. Do they limit his range of motion? And if they do, how does that affect how he plays? It's, I mean, there's just a lot that he's going to have to figure out and work through. And he is stubborn. He is tough. He doesn't want to not be out there.
Yeah.
And the question is going to be, what's the right decision for him in regards to, is 70% of Frank Ragnow better than Graham Glasgow at center and Wasika at guard. Like it may be. It may also not be. And the decision may be, well, we're going to wait until hopefully 2 weeks down the road and you'll get 3 weeks of rest and then you'll be at 85%. There's never going to be 100%. Like that ship sailed years ago.
Yeah, again, I don't know. Can it heal in a meaningful way in 3 weeks to where you say this is going to better preserve and protect right. that pec for a 20-week season?
Right.
Right, where you anticipate playing
you
a
want
long
him,
season's worth of football.
If all goes well, you certainly want him in week 16, 17, 18, and then in the playoffs.
Yep. So how do you get him there? I know it's been a lot of managing Frank Ragnow's body over the last several seasons.
Yep.
It's in some ways, we're used to this. They're certainly used to this. It's not a panic. Like, I look around the league and a lot of teams are banged up. And I know the Lions injury report isn't fun to look at right now. Derek Barnes out for a considerable amount of time. Davenport done for the season. They're going to face Seattle, who was without Kenneth Walker for a couple weeks. Yep. Their right tackle's going on injured reserve. Look around what's going on. Packers won two straight with a backup quarterback. Like, there's no excuses in this league. No one feels sorry for you. You got to go out and find a way to win the very next game.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's feeling sorry for San Francisco.
Right.
No one's feeling sorry for, you know, well, Dallas, their defense isn't playing well. Like, okay, even if it's just performance or it's injury, no one's going to feel sorry for you. Minnesota starts 3-0, and then their quarterback goes in for MRIs. No one is going to care when you play the game on whatever day you're supposed to play. Thursday night, Sunday, Monday, it doesn't matter. You got to go out there and find a way to overcome some of these obstacles.
You know, a team that this show's been bullish on is the Eagles, right?
Yeah.
We like the Eagles more than most people do. And look at them. A.J. Brown now two games. Devontae Smith.
Yeah.
They're get her done. Guess what? Wins are wins. And you gotta survive it. And they're going through – it's going to be a similar thing with them where these are going to linger a couple of weeks potentially. You just got to, you know
– find a way.
Like I said before the season, last year is not going to happen this year. This league changes constantly and stuff, and you got to just fight through this stuff. And compared to other teams, as long as nothing piles on now, I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, I think the most concerning one might be Derek Barnes, to be honest with you, because he had been playing good ball, and they were using him in a variety of ways. So it's not like you're replacing him in one spot on that defense.
Yeah, but when we talked to coaches, they said, hey, we have four starters.
Right.
And so, okay, now you're down a starter. You got three starters.
But Alex Anzalone, who didn't play last week, should play this week. So
Hopefully, but you still got two starters.
Exactly.
And you're starting two linebackers.
Right.
So, I mean, this is where attrition does make a difference, and it's building up the roster. I think the biggest question moving forward is, okay, Aiden Hutchinson has been very good. And he's been good because you are getting, not sack numbers, but you are getting pressure from other areas of the defense. Marcus Davenport, even though he didn't have the sack numbers, was applying pressure. He wasn't letting Kyler Murray or Matthew Stafford escape out of the pocket, and then all of a sudden there's Aiden Hutchinson to put a hit on him. Same thing in the middle. Aleem McNeil, DJ Reader, Levi Onwuzurike. All right, so now you're going to be playing in different positions. You just got to find a way to step up. But I think edge rusher, as the season continues, will become more of a talking point.
It's floated out earlier today. Cincinnati's 0-3. Trey Hendrickson, would you call as the deadline approaches? Hassan Reddick, double-digit sacks, four straight seasons. But he would come with a contract extension, which I don't know that the Lions would want to do.
Well, at any point, it's going to be a departure from the Brad Holmes theory. And it's not, I know coming from L.A., it was F them picks. Brad Holmes hasn't been there, but he also hasn't been in this position. How does he adjust his philosophy if you're in a season where it's just go get it?
Last thing that you asked him, I'm happy you did the secondary. He was very excited to talk about these defensive backs. They've played well through 3 weeks, shut down the deep passing game, which is a welcome sight. They're going to have to continue to play well with the matchup this week. Let's get to Heather in the news.
Well, if you live in Birmingham, you might want to go and look at buying an electric leaf blower, because it's possible that gas-powered leaf blowers could be banned in the near future. Okay. So the Birmingham City Commission met on Monday night to discuss a new ordinance that would ban gas-powered leaf blowers in the city by the summer of 2026. So you still have a little bit of time, but, you know, start looking early,
maybe.
Is it
because of the noise?
That's part of it, yes. So they say the reason is to protect the peace, health, safety, and welfare of people in the city and to promote the city's sustainability goals by reducing noise, pollution, and other negative effects from leaf blowers. Mm. So
the gallon of gas that a leaf blower takes versus trucks,
now
cars.
They wouldn't be the first city to do this. Ann Arbor already did this. They passed the ordinance banning gas-powered leaf blowers during the summer months. Totally, they want to get a total ban by 2028. So Birmingham would not be the first city to be doing this. But they did pass this resolution in support of the ban last year, which would eliminate the gas-powered leaf blowers by July 1st of 2026. And right now they're in the process of like drafting the ordinance language and then seeing how to move forward in the next steps. And it sounds like a lot of the residents are divided. They have mixed reactions.
Yeah.
Some don't really care and say that's totally fine. I don't mind. Others say, well, this is ridiculous.
Well, to John's point, I don't know that the leaf blowers are ruining our atmosphere. Like to me, and I drive an EV, yeah, it's a convenience argument for me. I have an electric mower. It's a convenience argument. I have no issue if someone wants to drive a gas car or use a gas mower or a gas leaf blower.
Well, and you ask somebody with a small yard, and you're like, yeah, okay, fine, an electric leaf blower is fine. You ask somebody that's picking up a lot of leaves or maintaining a large lawn.
If we don't have a gas-powered leaf blower, and like we bought like an industrial, like
sure,
what,
the backpack leaf blower.
You have to have it, or we live in the forest. Like we don't have, there's no other way that we'd be able to get, I mean, there would be another way, right? You can get a rake.
It'd be a pain in the ass. Yeah.
I guess, but it would be a backbreaking labor for sure, without a doubt. So just a heads up for those in Birmingham. A 10-year-old girl who vanished in Louisiana in the woods is now back home with her family thanks to a thermal imaging drone that tracked her. You guys, this little girl went missing. This was around 10 p.m. on September 14th because she was sleepwalking. She sleepwalked into the woods and basically found a nice place to lay down. And the footage shows her curled up and sleeping when the drone was like flying around trying to find her because she was sleepwalking. They say this girl is missing for over 24 hours. She was found in a dense area of the woods about 300 yards from where she had previously been spotted on trail camera. So thankfully, she's home. She's fine, but could have been a much different situation had they not had this thermal imaging drone.
Yeah.
Speaking of wild, after being abducted at 6 years old, a missing child was found 70 years later, alive and well. In 1951, this little boy, 6 years old, Louis Albino, he was playing in a park in Oakland, California. He was kidnapped by a woman who took him to the East Coast to raise him as her son. And that's exactly what she did. Now, more than seven decades later, he was found thanks to the help of online ancestry tests, some old photographs, some newspaper clippings. The story got a big break in 2020 when this guy's niece took one of those online DNA tests, matched with him. And then from there, more family members took more DNA tests and they determined, yes, this is this long-lost boy we've been looking for forever. And in June, the family was reunited, started, you know, connecting again as brother.
That's amazing.
To brother, yeah. His real mom,
yeah.
Birth mom has passed away. So has the woman who's kidnapped him
and raised him.
Yeah. She's also passed as well.
It's wild.
So
that is
crazy.
Wild.
Yeah. It's a wild story.
It's Heather with the news. All right. Coming up next, some talk about our baseball team. They got a day game today. Tarek Skubal on the bump. It's 97.1. Jackson Joe bringing his fireballs to the city of Detroit this week. He has the call up to the big club.
Bringing the heat.
It's 97-1. Tarek Skubal throws today at 110. Game got moved up. And I know that's not convenient for fans, right? We gave away a bunch of tickets thinking this was going to be a night game. Weather has played a role here, and the Tigers want to get this game in. They don't want to delay Tarek Skubal a day because then it takes away the possibility of him throwing in a must win on Sunday.
And it's Tigers. It's also Major League Baseball, who wants to try and keep everything on an equal footing in a race for a postseason spot. Now, the Twins already had to play that doubleheader on Sunday. It is one game apiece for the next six games between the Tigers, Minnesota, and Kansas City.
Yep. And I think the goal is easy. Get in, first and foremost. get in without needing to use Scooble after today, which would save him for game one of a playoff series. And the third goal is to get up into that second wild card spot to play Baltimore instead of Houston. And that's the order I would put those goals in. Get in, save Scooble, and if it works out where you can also pick up a game to secure a better first-round matchup, hell yeah, let's see it. 6 days, six games before the season wraps up, and we have playoff baseball in Detroit. And it sure feels like we're headed that way. 248-539-9797. John had a very simple question with a bunch of different answers. Who gets the most credit for this miraculous run? We made it a poll question. We'll update the results as the show wraps. But John, whether it's the players, whether it's AJ and Fetter, Scott Harris, Al Avila's on that poll question. I know no one wants to hear that. How would you answer it? Who deserves the most credit for what the Tigers have accomplished so far?
To me, it always comes down to the players. The guys that are out there actually performing when asked to perform. And yes, coaches put you in position, and I think AJ Hinch, Chris Fetter have done a masterful job of pulling the right strings at the right time. But even if you put a guy out there that you think, okay, I like a lefty against this lefty, they still have to go out and perform. And the players over the past 6 weeks have done a masterful job of being able to go out there in some tough situations, whether it's pinch hitting, it's pinch running, it's coming in relief. They have done openers have done a great job of going out there and actually performing when called upon.
The players deserve credit for sure. But most of the credit to me is to AJ Hinch and Chris Fetter, because these players are playing above themselves, and it's because they're being put in positions to be successful. In other words, if you're a reliever who is a lefty specialist, we're going to put you in against lefties. If you're a pitcher who we want to strategically set up to face the heart of the order, we can do that by managing this bullpen. Ground ball, fly ball, we can play the matchups and set you up for success, because a lot of these guys in the bullpen weren't getting it done in Toledo. They were up here for necessity, not because they were, you know, outstanding stuff. They were struggling against Triple-A hitters, but they were put in positions to succeed by AJ Hinch and Chris Fetter. If it was one or two players who had stepped up, maybe I'd give the credit to those one or two players. But when it's a collective the way it is for the Tigers, I think you have to give it up to the manager and his pitching coach. They're doing this with pitching and seemingly smoke and mirrors, but they're the ones puppeteering the whole thing. They're the one pulling the strings to make it happen. I think it's those guys, Hinch and Fetter, then the players, that deserve the most credit. And we can check the poll. I think that's the way most people feel about it, too. You can vote on Twitter, at Costa and Jansen.
Yeah.
And it's 53% Hinch Fetter, 42% the players, 3% Al Avila, and 2% Scott Harris.
Everybody always hates on the guy that's in that job right now. Always hate on him.
Harris, you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, are they doing this because of the moves he made, or largely because they've overcome?
So if we're going to talk about player development,
yeah,
who implements that plan?
Scott. Yeah, and so, it's executed by AJ, but yeah, sure. It's Scott.
Well, it's executed by AJ at the major league level, but it's also executed by other coaches at the AAA and lower levels. That's Scott Harris directing how he wants these players developed, or at least hiring the right people to develop the players.
I would buy on a granular level that Scott Harris has made a difference in this organization. I absolutely get that argument. But I think this season was one where they didn't bolster the team beforehand. They sold off at the deadline during, and they kept Javi Baez on the roster for the majority of the season. These are not moves you make if you feel like you are a playoff baseball team. They are doing this in spite of the moves that Scott made for the majority of the season. Doesn't mean he's going to be a failed GM, because the granular stuff matters. The player development stuff is the stuff we've been begging for years. But just keeping it 100, like, he's not on the same stratosphere for credit for me. And I think the people
reflected that either. It's always going to be the man in the arena, right? It's either the coach, and by coach we mean AJ Hinch and Chris Fetter, or it's the players that are actually going out and performing. And yes, coach, it's a quintessential chicken or the egg. You've got to put players, good coaches, good managers, put players in position to be successful. But ultimately, it's the players that got to perform.
I think part of the conversation too is Jackson Jobe, right? It's the same chicken or the egg, right? It's the player and the stuff, right? This is an elite pitching prospect, but it's also trusting that the coaching staff knows what they're doing, throwing him into a playoff chase right now, right? I mean, this idea that he is unproven, that the moment is pretty big, but I don't have any apprehension because they've done such a good job situationally setting these guys up that I expect them to put Jobe in positions to be successful. I expect the tone and the tenor of that clubhouse to remain at the right temperature. They've done a really good job being excited, building on this, being confident, but also being comfortable and not letting the pressure be too much. And that starts with the tone from leadership. So when you plug in a guy as young as Jackson Jobe, there may be some out there who are concerned, what if the blood pressure starts to spike and what if he starts to shake a little and he gets rattled and it doesn't work out? It could happen, but I don't have those concerns because of the way that they've conducted themselves between the ears during this run.
The psychological approach to the players, the psychology of it. And AJ's talked about it. He's never shied away from, you know, when we talk about 6 weeks ago, are you speaking at all to these guys about what's at stake each and every game? No, like it's just about winning one game. And you know, when a guy is down and how do you, one, protect him in the lineup or you send him down, you bring him back up and all of those different things, he's always talking about the mindset of the player and what it means to him. And I think there's a ton of credit given to A.J. Hinch for handling it with kid gloves at times, other times with an iron fist.
Yeah, I know we've had A.J. on every couple of weeks. We'll have him on Thursday. And there are times when we're thinking, hey, should you be bumping up Scoobal? Should Jackson Jobe already be here, right? This idea of like, go for it. And they've walked the fine line about applying pressure, not applying pressure. But John, it's clear at the final week here, foot's on the gas. Jobe's here. They're going to use Scoobal at least once, maybe twice if they need him the final six games. Like the foot is on the gas. There's no holding back. It's all hands on deck for the Tigers to get in the playoffs. And they've walked the line to get to this point, and it's in their hands.
It is. They control their own destiny. Now it's just a matter of going out and doing it. And it will come down to the psychology of it. Were they playing with house money and said, hey, we're not supposed to be here, so let's just keep out going and play it. Now we are here. Do things get tight? Do they pucker up?
Now that you're not hunting a spot, but you got to hold the spot.
Right.
But my point is, I don't think they should be trying to hold this spot. I think they're chasing better playoff matchups. They're chasing the ability to rest their ace.
Sure.
Like, there's still a lot for them to be.
The focus shouldn't necessarily, okay, you've overtaken the Twins. Hey, nice job. Pat on the back.
Sure.
You got your day off yesterday. Now it's six games to overtake the Royals. And while it's not likely, it's not probable, the Orioles are within reach. And they would need to be a complete disaster, and you're going to have to win out, basically. But my point is, always sets your sights a little bit higher.
Yes.
So once you reach a goal, you don't relax. You set a new goal, and that's the Royals, and then it's the Orioles. You're always reaching for something greater so that you're never sitting there resting and saying, huh, that's good enough.
Well, it's why I brought up yesterday, like, if you're the best team in baseball for 6 weeks and you get in the playoffs with this pitching staff,
why not?
You're not just, hey, maybe we'll win a game or a series. It's win the whole thing.
Did you just call them? Did you cost a lock a World Series?
Your thoughts, 248-539-9797. I did not.
Okay.
On the record, did not.
Just to clarify.
Just clarifying. It's always good to clarify. It's 97-1.
Hey, we talk about Costa Locks, and our teams here in Detroit they're giving us so much fun right now. So why not watch them in front of the greatest screen built for sports fans? It's a viewing experience that is second to none. You can chill in one of the six pools on three different levels. That is Stadium Swim, as located at Circa Resort and Casino. It's America's favorite place to watch all great moments, but especially football, since we're in football season. Swim-up bars, instant-ready selfie walls, one nonstop party. Score your perfect game day spot with cozy day beds, private cabanas, or grab a lounge at the center of the action. You can reserve your spot today. It's 365 days of sports poolside, located at Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas on Fremont Street. Stadium Swim, all sports, all seasons. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.